Hi, this is Meredith Foster. This is the Epic Podcast. Enjoy.
You know, child loss is so horrific. There's no word in the English language to describe it. When you lose your parents, you become an orphan. When you lose your spouse, you become a widow. But there's nothing to describe child loss. It's just so horrible.
Everybody has a story, and every one is a chapter. A piece of a much bigger picture. Welcome to Epic.
A great big story
that's been happening since the beginning.
It's filled with redemption,
suffering,
hope,
and power.
It has many characters.
And so you and I
are a part of it.
We're not the hero.
This is Epic.
Hi, this is Meredith Foster. When Julia Wilson's son went off to war in Afghanistan, she was nervous and worried, as any parent would be. When he finally came home, she breathed a sigh of relief. But not long after he arrived, she and her husband began to see the symptoms of what he was dealing with, post-traumatic stress disorder. She had no idea of the depth of his struggle and no idea how much she would need God to help her through the days ahead. This is Chapter 55 of Epic, Julia Wilson's story.
My husband and I, David, have been married for 35 years, and we raised our kids in a small town. And Tyler grew up with two siblings and played sports and was in Boy Scouts and attended church and went to church camp, graduated from high school, and then he decided that he wanted to join the Marine Corps. He actually knew that the whole time he was growing up. My brother was a Desert Storm veteran. He was also a Marine. So Tyler said from the time he was very little that he wanted to be a Marine. We have lots of pictures of him in Marine t-shirts. And I mean, that was just always his goal. So on September 11th, 2007, he left for basic training out in California and graduated from boot camp. He was stationed in Okinawa, Japan for a year. And then he was sent on his first deployment to Afghanistan. During that deployment, he was in an intelligence battalion, and he had his own private sat phone, so he called home every day.
You're kidding.
No,
how unusual is
that? Wonderful.
Is that unusual?
Oh, yeah, very unusual. And so Dad and I were very relieved because we got to talk to him almost every day. You know, the first time they go, you don't really know what's happening. You don't know what to expect. So to be able to hear his voice every day was just wonderful.
Wow. And how did he seem in that time?
Well, they would go out on missions. And of course, since he was in intelligence, he couldn't really tell us what he was doing. But he'd say, I'm going out for 3 days. I'll be back. And then he would call and say, we're back safe. And, you know, it was just like he was away in another state or something. And we were just having these conversations and he was doing his job and we were going about our life. But the next deployment, he left the intelligence battalion and joined an infantry battalion, which meant he was on the front lines. He was the one kicking down the doors when they were going door to door in these towns looking for insurgents. And so that was much more scary. Sometimes we wouldn't hear from him for weeks at a time. So that was second deployment. Then he came home and...
How long was that second deployment?
They're usually about 10 months.
Okay.
So they're they're gone for quite a while. And he would always come home after deployment and we would have big family, you know, gatherings and everyone was always so relieved to see him. So then after 4 years in the Marine Corps, he decided he was going to join the Department of Defense with this company and do private security contracting. So off he went for a third deployment at Camp Leatherneck in Afghanistan. So then when that deployment was over, it wasn't as long. He came home much sooner because, like I said, that was private contracting. And so then he came home and started to rebuild his life, get back into civilian life, and find a job. I mean, he didn't have a car. He didn't have a job. So he lived with us and kind of just started to rebuild his life. Part of the problem with a lot of soldiers when they do that is their peers are 5 years, 4 years ahead of them. They're already through college. They're already married. They already have these great jobs. They already have the house. And these soldiers come home. They can't acclimate to society. They're having all these symptoms relating to war, PTSD symptoms. And it just starts causing all these problems. They have trouble finding jobs, and they just can't relate to their peers. And so he kind of worked these menial jobs until he got into the lineman apprenticeship program, which took about a year and a half, or I don't know, a couple of years. And he was diagnosed with PTSD when he was actually still on the battlefield. So his second deployment, he was diagnosed. So we knew he had PTSD.
And what were the symptoms of that?
How was he diagnosed? So we saw it. We lived it every day with him. Sleepless nights. We'd hear him up at night roaming around the house because he couldn't sleep. If he was asleep, you could not startle him. He would just like jump up out of the bed and be very startled and, you know, like he was ready to fight or whatever, kind of the fight or flee. Some anger issues. You know, it was just kind of a downward spiral. I mean, we just watched him. We knew he had these symptoms, but we didn't know how to help him. You know, I say, I wish I knew then what I know now, because we thought as his parents, well, he'll just get over it. Those symptoms will just go away. Well, it doesn't work like that. I mean, they need therapy and resources that the VA provides for them to work through this. I mean, it's a process. There's no magical pill. There's no switch that you flip to just get over it. So we watched him suffer for 5 years. And we honestly, he hid a lot of that from us as his parents. He didn't want to let us into that. You know, as a Marine, he was trained to be a killer. He was trained to be tough. He wasn't trained to ask for help. Mm-hmm. And so I think that he felt asking for help was a sign of weakness. So he got this apprenticeship. And we celebrated, and he bought this new truck and a new house. And, you know, Dad and I just breathed a big sigh of relief. We're like, whew, finally. Yeah, he's home safe from war. He's, you know, beginning this new life. And we just were joyful and relieved. And
did you feel like you saw a change in him?
Well, we didn't see him. You know, when you live with someone, you see every day kind of what's going on.
Yes.
And I think that when he moved out, he tried to kind of separate from us even further. And when he was by himself so much, I think the downward spiral got even worse. And he started to self-medicate. He was drinking a lot, which was very upsetting. I mean, Dad and I just worried about him all the time, driving and drinking too much. And, you know, but he was an adult man. He was 29 years old. I mean, we had kind of an intervention with him. I mean, we told him, we'll do whatever. I will drive you to any therapy. I'll go to the VA with you. I mean, we thought at that time we had done everything we could possibly do. Yeah. You cannot make a grown man do something he isn't ready to do or doesn't want to do. Yeah. So he continued on, and we just kind of, life just kind of went on, you know, kind of how it had been. We actually had his brother's wedding reception. His brother Travis lives in Wisconsin, and they got married there. So we decided we were going to have a wedding reception for all of the people that lived locally. And so we had it at the American Legion. And so we had a wedding reception one weekend. And then in that week, Tyler ended his life, and we had the funeral the next weekend. And we were totally blindsided. I mean, Tyler never told us he was suicidal. We never saw any evidence of that. We were just all totally, totally blindsided.
A parent's worst nightmare. They had no idea how deep Tyler's depression and struggle with PTSD had become. And now he was gone far too soon. Part two of their story is coming up on Epic. Welcome back to Epic. We're grateful that you're joining us today. If you'd like to hear more stories like this, head to our website,
and find more than 50 chapters of Epic, each one a powerful story of God at work. We believe everybody has a chapter in God's great big story, and we would love to hear about yours at myfaithradio.com. Today, we're hearing Julia Wilson's story. Here's part two.
We actually had his brother's wedding reception, and so we had it at the American Legion. So we had a wedding reception one weekend, and then in that week, Tyler ended his life, and we had the funeral the next weekend. And we were totally blindsided. I mean, Tyler never told us he was suicidal. We never saw any evidence of that. We were just all totally, totally blindsided. Never saw it coming. And I don't think anyone did. I mean, if you look at pictures of Tyler, he was on the outside appearing the happiest person. He has a smile in every single picture we have of him. And he was a people person. He loved to talk to people. He had this big, huge personality. And so there was a lot of people affected by his death. We had his services at the local American Legion, and there was many veteran service organizations involved, the Honor Guard and the Marine Corps League and the Legion Riders, and it was wonderful. There was just this outpouring of love. There was over 500 people at his visitation and funeral. So his death had a huge impact on many, many people. I mean, just this huge gaping hole left in our lives. Mm-hmm. We just didn't realize the depth of despair and, you know, what all was going on in his mind. We actually read his VA records after his death. Horrific, just heartbreaking. Because they knew what was going on, but of course they couldn't tell us any of that. And so it was at that, at Tyler's funeral, that I met another mother who had lost her son, who was also a Marine, to PTSD suicide. Mm. And we just casually met that day. She was part of the program that the Legion Riders did. And then a couple months later, we were asked to do a TV interview for Veterans Day about PTSD. We wanted to do it because we wanted to bring awareness to PTSD and the crisis of veteran suicide. You know, 22 veterans a day commit suicide. That's an epidemic and a crisis in our country. After the interview, we got to talking. She said, you know, I had this idea about maybe trying to provide some gym memberships for some local veterans. She was a Navy veteran and she loved to work out. And as we discussed it, Tyler and Aaron also both love to work out as Marines. That is a very mm-hmm. big part of their life. And I mean, even when Tyler would come home on leave, he would be running. He would be at the gym. He would drag his brother Travis to the gym. Jenny and I decided that one of the signs that we missed was that Tyler and Aaron had both quit working out shortly before their death, which to us said they had given up hope on life. And that was an indicator. We totally missed it. And so we put our heads together and we came up with the name of the foundation, Working Out PTSD. And so what we do is we provide gym memberships to local veterans. They don't have to have PTSD. We'll give any veteran a gym membership just as a way of saying thank you for your service. Every gym kind of in the local area partners with us. And so we've been able to put over 100 veterans in the gym and helped by a PTSD service dog. Veterans find us on Facebook and contact us. I mean, it's really become like a full-time job, which we love. And that's our focus, is helping living veterans to prevent the tragedy that Jenny and I have suffered.
Let's talk about where your faith in God was, who you were before this happened in terms of your faith. I assume you were a believer.
Oh, absolutely.
Did you grow up as a believer?
Yep. Well, I didn't go to church as a child, wasn't raised in the church. When David and I got married, he grew up in the church. So we started attending the little kind of country church that he grew up in. That's the church we were married in. David and I got baptized together there. Tyler was actually baptized at that church when he was 10 years old. So very fond memories of that little country church. And so we raised our kids in the church. I mean, Travis was in the church. He was born like on a Thursday and was in church on that Sunday for Easter. So we had a very firm foundation of faith. But when your world gets rocked like this and your life kind of implodes, you really cling to your faith. And other believers just put this hedge of love around us and prayer. You know, there was so many people. I mean, stacks of cards, and people would bring us books and just nonstop text messages and phone calls and just people saying, you know, checking on you, we're always praying for you, thinking about you daily. And it's like we could feel those prayers. I mean, they just washed over our soul as just healing and comforting. I just can't imagine going through something like this and not having faith. I mean, it was really my faith in God that kept me grounded to the earth. You know, child loss is so horrific. There's no word in the English language to describe it. When you lose your parents, you become an orphan. When you lose your spouse, you become a widow. But there's nothing to describe child loss. It's just so horrible. I can't even imagine not having my faith. I mean, there was times in the beginning when I was so brokenhearted and so broken, I didn't even know what to pray. I just called out the name of Jesus. That's all I knew to do, you know. And so as the process of healing kind of led on, I was able to kind of pray more fervent prayers. And one thing I had never thought of before was asking God to comfort me. I just had never had that thought before of other trials in life. But this was just devastating. I just felt like I needed God to comfort me. And so that was my prayer. That was the first prayer I started praying. Okay, God, you just have to send me your comfort. And he showed up in a big way. I just don't know how you would keep putting one foot in front of the other or continuing to breathe without his comfort and his love and assurance that we're going to be reunited with Tyler.
Do you remember some of the specific ways you experienced his comfort?
Well, one thing, and I don't know if everybody experiences this in grief or not, but so every day I would wake up and the first thought on my mind was, okay, was that a dream or is that real? Is Tyler really dead? And then the reality would set in. Oh my gosh, it's real. He's really gone. Every day for months, months and months and months. That's all, every first thing I thought every day when I woke up. And so then I started to pray this prayer. Okay, God, please send me your comfort. And I said, you've got to take that away from me. Every day, it's like reliving his death every morning anew. And I said, please, you've got to take that away. And it just went away. And I didn't have that thought, that overwhelming sense of reliving, yes, he's dead, every morning.
I can imagine.
It was horrible.
I can imagine with that you wouldn't want to get out of bed.
Right, yes. Yeah. You know, I went to a mother's seminar. There's an organization called TAPS, Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors, and it's for military families. And they provide support and mentors, and they have these seminars all over the country. And I went to this mother's seminar. So it's all military mothers that have survived the loss of their children. And we did this exercise where two people hold this rope and you stand on one side and you say, I've come with fear, was what I said. At that time, I was so afraid something was going to happen to another one of my children. Mm-hmm. And I was just overwhelmed with this fear. I mean, almost to the point of just extreme fear. And I said, okay, I'm bringing this fear to you, God, and I want to leave this here. And then you step over the rope and you say what you're going to leave with. And so when I stepped over that rope, I said, I am leaving here making a promise to Tyler that I'm not going to die in my grief. I'm going to try to live a life of joy. I'm not saying it's going to be easy, and there'll be times when I fail miserably, and I have. But I'm going to try to keep that promise that I'm going to try to live a life of joy.
And how do you do that practically speaking, like you're in a relationship? What are the things that help you move toward joy and away from debilitating grief?
Well, friends, for me, they say that to process grief that you have to talk. You have to keep talking and talking and talking. I attended Grief Share, which is a national program. They have at different churches around the country. Grief comes out one way or another, and it can either come out in a good way or it can come out in a bad way. But one way or another, it's going to come out. And so for me, relying on my friends and family who have been wonderful and so supportive, and they just let me talk about Tyler all the time. We tell stories and we laugh and they let me cry. And so very, very supportive of this healing journey. But another wonderful thing that has happened through this is in my search for healing and on this journey, I decided that I needed other mothers who have lost children. You can really only understand this if you've experienced it. So I started a local support group called Angel Moms, and unfortunately, we have about 130 mothers that are in this group. We have a closed Facebook group, and we meet monthly for support. We share a meal together, we cry together, we laugh together, and we just share life as we're walking through the valley of the shadow of death together. You know, on those hard days, those birthdays, and we call them angelversaries, the date of the death of your child, you know, we just cry out to each other and support one another. And it has been a wonderful source of encouragement and hope and healing.
Where are you at with God now? And where are you at in your grief process now?
Well, I can't imagine going through something like this without faith. For me, it's been a tether to earth to keep me grounded and to work through the process of the healing journey. The journey of grief is not linear. I don't care what people say. There's not one, two, three, four, five, six steps, and then you're at the end. The grief journey of child loss is a hot mess. Mm-hmm. You know, you go forward two steps and back one step and zigzag for a while. You're just all over the place. I mean, the slightest little thing, you know, walking through the grocery store and seeing a bag of gummy bears. I've had to leave the grocery store before because it just sends me into this puddle of tears, or driving by, you know, a favorite restaurant. And so just, you know, always having that conversation with God, I can't do this without you. I need you right here with me every step of the way, and providing that hope and the comfort, you know, knowing that we'll see Tyler in heaven again and that we'll be reunited and there'll be no more pain for him or for us. We still have a lot of pain here on earth. One of the things that I say when I do public speaking and when I tell Tyler's story is that suicide doesn't end pain. It just transfers it to those left behind. And so lots and lots of pain that we still deal with. But we have the hope of being reunited and seeing Tyler again. And really, this life on earth is short. It's that little dash between the dates. And eternity is going to be forever. So we get to spend forever with him. So I'm thankful for that.
For someone listening who, for them or somebody they love, is struggling with suicidal thoughts,
Well, first and foremost, you have to reach out. Just tell someone. It's okay to not be okay. You know, and even just saying it out loud and talking about it, and things can always get better. Don't think because you're having a bad, you know, day or a bad time in your life that it's going to be that way forever, because it's not. But step number one, which is the hardest step, is you have to tell someone. You have to ask for help. Mm-hmm. And there's many ways to do that. If you see someone that's struggling, if you see a friend or a coworker and you think, you know, they just don't seem right, or they just seem really sad all the time, or they're isolating themselves, reach out to them. You start that difficult conversation. You know, and I know those conversations aren't easy to have, because we tried to have that conversation with Tyler, but you have to do it. You have to keep trying. Don't ever give up. We live a life of shoulda, coulda, woulda. suicide grief is very complex layers of loss. I mean, there's grief, but there's also guilt and shame, just lots of suffering. And so I think having those conversations, reaching out for people, don't ever give up. You know, we always look back and think, oh, we should have done this. We could have tried harder. We should have done this. You know, I don't want other people to have to live a life of shoulda, coulda, woulda.
Julia has kept the promise she made to Tyler. She promised that she would not die in her grief, but she'd try to live a life of joy. She says she certainly still deals with the pain of his loss, but she's also found joy in loving and giving comfort to others. She's found hope and healing by serving veterans and mothers who've lost a child. If you'd like to learn more about the organizations she started, Angel Moms or Working Out PTSD, you can reach out to Julia through the Working Out PTSD Facebook page. Thanks so much to Julia for sharing her story. Thanks also to the folks who make Epic possible, Jason Rackow and Ted Ross for help with production, Stefan Johnson for our theme music, and I'm your host, Meredith Foster. See you next week. Thanks so much for listening. Every episode of Epic is made possible by people like you. You can make a gift today at myfaithradio.com. And if you love the show, let others know about it by sharing this audio link. You can make sure you never miss an episode when you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or your favorite podcast player.